Your value is not determined by what you get paid, ever. Your value is determined, as far as work goes, by what you contribute and what you can contribute.
There seems to be a deficit of conversations around the whys of living away from the convenience of town, spending precious time on trying to grow your own food when you can just buy it in the shops, and if choosing this lifestyle really is making a difference on our characters and that of our families. Welcome to the Cultivate Podcast. We are passionate about and love having conversations on what impact truly experiencing country living, true education, and agriculture can have on our lives. We hope and pray that by us sharing these conversations with people from all different backgrounds and experiences, that you can feel equipped from the practical advice and inspired by the stories to continue or pick up where you left off.
So in 1989, I left school to become a dairy farmer. My parents told me I could leave school if I got a job, and I was about one term into seventh form, I think, and I said, I've had enough of this. So I got a job working on a dairy farm just out the other side of Darkville, actually. It's where the Northland Field Days is held now. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the farm there, but the guy that I worked for sold it to the Field Days Association when he retired from farming. So I did a dairy farm cadetship with him, which was really valuable. Again, it was through the Open Polytech of New Zealand, correspondence course, often on a rainy day, or if there wasn't so much to do on the farm, he'd send me in to do my assignments, and then he would have a list of practical tasks that I had to do through the Polytech, and he'd check them off as I became competent in them. Basically like an apprenticeship, I guess, farm cadetship in dairy farming. So I got a trade certificate in dairy farming for my efforts after about 3 years. Then I made quite a pivotal decision, I guess, to attend Weimar College in California. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Weimar or not, and what happens there, I guess, this was in the early 90s, 92 to 94.
Herbert Douglas was there?
No, he wasn't. He probably left the year before I came. Right. Yeah, his name, Herbert Douglas, was a familiar name, but I think I might have seen him once or twice around campus during my first year there. Bob Hancock was the head of the religion department then, and he was great value, good guy. He actually performed our wedding when I got married, so we appreciated him a lot. So I spent 2 years there, but you can imagine the shock going from dairy farming to principles of health class and being told that dairy's not good for you. And growing up all my life thinking, you know, we were brought up, well, I went to state school and you know, how are you going to get strong bones and calcium and all that sort of thing. I mean, obviously we know different now. That was the world I was brought up in.
Weimar, is it, it's a health thing or something, is it?
Okay, so Weimar Institute is a lifestyle centre, a college. I'm not sure if they've achieved university status now.
They have.
They have now, okay.
It's accredited though.
It's accredited, so, and they have a high school there as well. So my daughter's going there, my oldest daughter Elizabeth's there at the moment. She's doing teacher training, and she has just been over to Guam with Dr. Nedley, who's heading president there at the moment. But she went over with about six or eight other people from Weimar, and she's been working with them developing a curriculum. He does a lot of work in thinking to do with mental health, depression, recovery and stuff. So she's been working on a curriculum to teach cognitive thinking in schools for the island of Guam, or for the nation of Guam. And she was there presenting in front of about 50 people, district court judges and etc., you know, politicians. So quite something. So Weimar, they have a lifestyle centre where they take in guests and put them through the New Start program. The eight laws of health: nutrition, exercise, water, sunshine, temperance, air, rest and trust in God. And they give them lectures in that. They have under the care of physicians and nurses. When I was there, They did hydrotherapy and massage as well with these geese and changed their diet, presented lectures on the New Start principles, exercise out in the trails and stuff. But we saw people there when I was there that they'd wheel them in wheelchairs, unable to walk much at all. And by the time they were at the end of the 21-day program, they'd be walking half a mile a day and a mile a day sort of thing. And incredible changes in people's lives happened from Wemar, just using the principles of health that God's given us. So that was, yeah, it was 2 good years of my life. But yeah, you can imagine the shock I had going from the farm in New Zealand to to that. And yeah.
How did you find the transition personally?
Really quite challenging. Quite challenging because on many levels, really. On a personal level, I, at that stage in my life, and this, you know, might not sound very politically correct, but I was probably quite arrogant and, you know, tough New Zealand farm boy, into weightlifting and stuff as well. So I thought a lot of myself and body, you know, power, strength, training and that. And when I got there, I applied to work on the farm because, you know, I've done gardening all my life and surely they're going to need me on the farm. Well, I ended up getting put in the cafeteria. And that was, you know, beneath my dignity. And really, I had no vision for that. I thought it was quite demeaning and it wasn't my place at all. And I wondered why on earth I'd left New Zealand with a paying job to go back to school, which I didn't finish school here. I wanted to get away from school 3 years before. And yet in the first week, I found myself back behind a desk and thought, what have you done?
Did you actually decide to go yourself?
Absolutely. So I went to Longburn for sixth form and the first term of seventh form. And I had a friend there, Greg Timmins. He's now pastoring in Gisborne. He was in Cambodia for quite a bit with AFM, so Adventist Frontier Missions. But he was really instrumental in getting me to go there. We were communicating by mail because there's no such thing as emails back in those days. And so every now and again, yeah, we'd correspond, write letters. And he encouraged me to come over. It was a time of my life where having left school and wandering a bit, my faith was kind of being shaken with various influences, you know, sort of 18, 19, 20 years old, going through the farm cadetship, you know, leaving home, still around the home locality, but, you know, you got your own wheels and you can go where you want to go and do what you want to do sort of thing. So challenging, and I found that I wasn't spending as much time with God as I wanted to. Long hours on dairy farms. You know, you're up at 5 a.m. and often don't get finished work until 6, 7 at night during calving season in particular. So long days, long hours. Fun work, but long. And so I didn't have the devotional life that I wanted, and I thought, well, you know, and Greg encouraged me to come to Wemar, and like I say, I really don't know what I expected when I got there, but it wasn't what I thought it might be. It was quite a shock. So I do believe that God led me there. I never intended to go there and find a wife, but I did. And she's been the biggest blessing of my life. Like I say, I had 2 great years there. I guess I came back because I ran out of money to go there and didn't have any real concept or any mentoring in the idea that God could provide by faith if I wanted to continue there. I've tried to do that with my daughter, teach her that it's God, not Dad, that will provide for you. And she's been there for 3 years so far by faith and by hard work and by donations and by support from other people. But God has provided for her to be there. I always say that God has resources for people that are doing his work. You know, if you're doing what God wants you to do, he'll provide what you need to do it. And so about country living, if he wants you in the country, he'll get you there. So yeah, from Wemar, I guess I came back home. I've had 2 years some courses in pastoral ministries was what they advised me to go into when I got there. I did that, and the second year I could see I wasn't going to finish, so I took more general subjects of interest, branched out into some health, education stuff that was all quite valuable. I've still got a lot of my notes and still refer to them from time to time when I have occasions to preach in town or things like that. A lot of the training I received there was still very valuable. So I came home and worked on a dairy farm, went back to the people that I was working for 2 years prior to going to Weimar and did another season for them, and then went back to the States for a short time, got married over in Canada because my wife's Canadian, and then we came back and settled on a dairy farm just outside of Dargaville, and I managed that for 2 years. The farm sold, and so we were without a job. Went home and worked with Dad for a bit. At that time, Dad had the block of land on the other side of the driveway. It's 45 acres there. He had another 50 acres, 2 km or so down the road, plus the home farm down at Tokatoka. So a couple of blocks, and I was able to work in with Dad and lease these 2 blocks. And I did sort of a part season working with Dad, and then we needed to change our accommodation. And so I got a job working out in the hills out that direction a bit, not far out, but a job on a beef farm where there was a house with the farm. So I've never actually rented a house in my whole life. There's always been a house with the job, and often farm jobs have been that way over the years. I think some of it's sort of changed with regulation. It was easy to find accommodation if you worked on the farm. So that was a big beef farm, and I was a married man on $10 an hour, working about 20 hours a week for him, working these 2 blocks in my spare time. But on $10 an hour, it was quite a drop from the wages I'd been on dairy farms. I learnt from that, well, I probably already knew it, but it sort of cemented in my mind that your value is not determined by what you get paid, ever. Your value is determined, as far as work goes, by what you contribute and what you can contribute. It doesn't matter so much what your abilities or disabilities are. God has given each person gifts. They're not all the same, but they're all valuable and all necessary. Your value, like I say, has nothing to do with what you get paid per hour, if that's the way it is. Your value in society is what you can contribute. And I don't care if you're flat on your back in a bed, crippled. You can still contribute something. You can still pray for someone. You can still smile at someone. You can still bless someone by just being cheerful. You know, it doesn't have, you don't have to be a hard physical worker. You can always do something to make someone's day brighter. You know, you pick up these life lessons. Some of the other life lessons I picked up, the guy I worked for out there, he had a reputation for being a hard man, but I think under it, he had a pretty reasonable heart. Under the exterior. I won't tell the story on camera. tell you another time maybe. But some of the maxims I learned from him, the sayings I learned from him, take a bit of pride in your work. Do it once, do it right. You know, these are things he drilled into me. Other sayings we had, where there's a will, there's a way. Necessity's the mother of invention. My parents taught me, can't's the son of won't try. And I say that to my kids too, can't's the son of won't try, and I'm not won't try. So there's no such thing as can't sort of idea. And we say, you know, those who say it can't be done should get out of the way of those that are doing it. And he had another saying that also, it's doing the things that you don't want to do that'll make a man out of you. And, you know, these are all just part of life, aren't they? The things that aren't glamorous, the little things, the doing the dishes and the scrubbing the toilet and the fixing the plumbing and whatever else, you know, digging ditches, shoveling out the septic tank if that's what needs doing. Things like that you don't want to do, that make a person. Someone's got to do the jobs that no one else wants to do.
What a journey Sheldon has been on. And I think it's crazy how God gives us opportunities and they can lead us all over the place. So many times when we think of a career or we think of education, we think that we need to stay in one place for a certain amount of time and map out our life plan, which is sometimes really good as well. But I just love him being able to look back on his life and see how God has clearly led him in so many places, two places that taught him so many things. And yeah, I just think it's really key to be able to hear God's voice and listen to where he's leading, because that's where the greatest education opportunities are going to occur, right?
Yeah.
What did you think, Khan? What was your standout?
Yeah, what I found interesting from Sheldon's podcast was his perspective on what true value is in society, because sometimes we think people who are most valuable in society are those people who have like tons of skills, tons of resources. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important that we understand that what we contribute to society is not necessarily like what we have in our resources, but it's more about what we have to give to people, you know.
Mm.
Like as in, just as being a friend or supporting one another in a community, like that's what really counts at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah, and that's something all of us can do, right? And I think it's a really powerful point that he brought, what brings us value. And I was just thinking of that in context of a sermon I heard this last Sabbath talking about the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of earth. And so many times the ideology and the thought process and the way we live our lives on earth are so different from the culture of heaven. And that's just really challenged me, especially this week, to be able to go, okay, is what I'm thinking, is what I'm doing, is my thought processes, are they coming from a place of heavenly origin, or are they coming from a place of the world's ideas and the world's ideology? I think Sheldon's testimony really challenges that. Where are we getting our ideas from, and how are we living our lives?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's so easy for us to be, I guess, complacent with what we understand, but we always have to keep on growing and learning wherever we are. Every stage in life requires us to keep learning. That's what he's been doing in his life. You can see, you know, from the very beginning, he was a milk farmer, and then he ended up going to Weimar, and then came back to New Zealand, and then what he's doing now, farming. So it's just really inspiring to see how God led him, and I hope that he will continue to lead Sheldon as he's doing his work there in New Zealand.
Thanks for listening to the Cultivate podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you find us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our mailing list by the links below so you don't miss out. And if you have a moment, we'd love it if you could leave a review or tell a friend. See you next time.